This is Edwin O'Shea recording for section 2.6 for Math 235. So, going to the opening page of that section, you'll notice the heading is derivatives of trigonometrics and hyperbolic functions, and there's a star on the hyperbolic. So we're just going to ignore the hyperbolic functions. So we're just going to pay attention to the first two things, which is the derivatives of the six trigonometric functions, sine, cosine, tan, secant, cosecant, cotan, and then the derivatives of these of the inverses of these trigonometric functions. So let's start off this section. Note that you're given the function of sine of x. In the first picture on the left, you have some tangent lines indicated. For example, the tangent line at the tangent line at x equal to pi over 2. And so, of course, it's a natural thing to ask about what the slope of the tangent line would be at any given x to the function f of x equal to sine of x. And it turns out to be cosine. And that's rather a difficult thing to prove. That's theorem 2.17, part A of it, says the derivative of sine of x is cosine of x. But you see, for example, that the derivative of cosine is negative sine of x. Tan of x has a derivative of secant squared, etc., etc. So before delving into the proof of these things, what we're going to do is the following. We are going to just prove, using the original limit definition, part A of theorem 2.17. And then the rest of the parts, we will use various identities that relate things like cosine, tan, etc. To the sine function. So first of all, let's begin with the proof of part A. Notice that in this first collection, collection of equations, you, as always, you start off with the definition of the derivative. You have a sine of x plus h term there. That's the sine of the sum of two angles. We have a sum identity for sine. And now we're just going to break things up piece by piece. Notice that in the second line of that equation, you have a sine of x cosine of h, first term. And the third term is minus sine of x. So you're grouping the common factor of sine of x together, and you're getting sine of x cosine of h minus 1. And then the other term you've left over is sine of h times cosine of x. And now you're dividing those two terms by h, so you break up those two terms. You have sine of x times cosine of h minus 1 over h, and you have cosine of x times sine of h over h. Using that the limit of a sum is the sum of the limits, you have the next line, and the limit of the first term, notice that sine of x is not dependent at all on h, so you can bring sine of x outside that limit. And similarly, cosine of x is not dependent on h, so you can bring the cosine of x outside of that second limit. And now notice next that you have each of these identities. You have the limit of cosine of h minus 1 over h is 0, and the limit of sine h over h as h goes to 0 is 1. And that's exactly where you get cosine of x from, after you simplify the terms. Now notice that with, the main theme there was that you really needed to use the limit definition for sine. Now for part C, notice that you have something nice. You have the derivative of tan of x. Now it might be tempting to write down the limit definition for the tan of x, but if you do so, you might see that that's not getting you far. But you really don't have to do that if you know part B. Part B is that the derivative of cosine of x is negative sine of x. And of course, tan is just sine of x over cosine of x. And you can just apply the quotient rule to sine of x over cosine of x to get the derivative of tan of x being 1 over cosine squared of x, or in other words, secant squared x. Now, I should back up a second. I'm going to talk briefly about the proof for part B. The derivative of cosine of x. What I'll say here is that you know you have an identity that says cosine squared of x plus sine squared of x is equal to 1. And what I suggest there is take that identity and take the derivative of each side of that identity, take the derivative with respect to x. You'll get a term there involving the derivative of cosine, you'll get a term involving the derivative of sine, and you already know what the derivative of sine is, and hence you can solve for the derivative of cosine. And likewise for D, E, and F, you can derive it from using the derivatives of functions that you already know. All right, next subsection is the derivatives of inverse trigonometric functions. So theorem 2.18 talks about the derivatives of arcsine, arctan, and arcsecant. Now, again, for all of these, you can just write down a limit definition. But this is very similar, skipping on to the proof of part A, notice that it's really similar to the way in which you found the derivative of natural log of x back in the previous section. And that was to find the derivative of natural log of x, you already knew what the derivative of e to the x was. And you used the fact that e to the x and natural log of x were inverse functions of each other. And then you studied the derivative of the composition of the exponential function and the log function, and you knew that that was equal to x. So it's worth looking back at that proof again. Notice here now for the proof of part A, the first thing that they do is that, right, you want to know what the derivative of arcsine of x is, but you're using the fact that the sine of the arcsine of x is equal to x itself. And now you're taking the derivative of both sides, you're applying the chain rule, in the third line there you're getting cosine of arcsine of x times the derivative of arcsine of x is equal to 1. And that enables you to solve this expression where you just have the derivative of arcsine of x on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, you've 1 over the cosine of arcsine of x. Now notice, of course, that cosine of arcsine of x, you have some nice identities there. That goes back to section, I think it's 1.5, where these identities are spoken about. I forget the exact example. But it's identities that enable you to write down expressions like cosine of arcsine of x in terms of algebraic identities. And that's exactly what's happening here. And what you end up with is the derivative of arcsine is 1 over the square root of 1 minus x squared. It's a very similar derivation for the derivative of arctan. For arctan, you use that the tan of arctan of x is just x itself, and it carries out in much the same way. Similarly for the arc, for arcsecant as well. And there you go, right? In the next few figures, you have some nice pictures of what the derivatives of these functions look like. Okay, skipping ahead to the exercises, remember we're skipping hyperbolic functions. You know, I said exercises, but I meant examples. Skipping ahead to the examples, you see example 1. Now all of a sudden you can find derivatives of functions involving the trigonometric and the inverses of the trigonometric functions as well. Note, for example, in part C of example 1, you have secant squared of e to the x, right? You know, no surprises there. You let your difficult part be equal to e to the x, and then you carry out the derivatives using the chain rule as before. Example 2 talks about hyperbolic functions. We're going to skip that. Example 3 is interesting, because it's asking you to identify an antiderivative of a given function, namely to identify a function whose derivative is equal to this f prime of x. All right, so look at that carefully. All right, and then onto the exercises. I've just assigned a collection of exercises. I think I've said maybe, you know, with regards to the skills problem, just take every fourth problem from 18 to 60 or 70. I forget exactly which one. But anyway, the exercises are assigned. You can look at those carefully. All right, so good luck with the exercises. And as always, enjoy the reading.